regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Flying solo on today's broadcast. Had a very eventful day yesterday, so I apologize for not being able to schedule a guest, but we'll get back to our company on Monday. We do have a lot to talk about today, though. We've got good news out of California, where a federal judge has finally done what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has instructed her to do, and filed a preliminary injunction against the entirety of California's law that targeted the speech of gun sellers, gun makers, in some cases, gun owners. This was a law we've talked about with this with Chuck Michelle on plenty of occasions. The lawsuit is Junior Shooting Sports versus Bonta. The law in question made it a crime to market in any way firearms in a fashion that might be susceptible or agreeable to minors. And this language was so broad that when the law was first enacted, you had youth shooting sports leagues across the state of California shut down because they were afraid that, you know, even having a sponsor would be seen as a violation of this law, which I believe carried a $10,000 fine for every violation of the law. You could not advertise any kind of firearm that was geared towards a youth shooter. Gavin Newsom, talked about the JR-15 rifle, calling it a weapon of war. Why are we marketing these weapons of war to kids? This is a 22 long rifle, semi-automatic rifle, but it's a 22 long rifle. But even if you, it wasn't just JR-15, not that I have a problem with that, but, Gavin Newsom was going after things like the single-shot cricket rifle that I used to teach my own kids. Anything, again, that was designed to be used by a youth shooter, if you advertise that in any way, shape, or form, you'd be running afoul of the California law. So, California Rifle and Pistol Association, Second Amendment Foundation, Junior Shooting Sports Magazine Incorporated, or Junior Shooter Magazine Incorporated, Junior Sports Magazine Incorporated, and several individual plaintiffs filed suit. The district judge originally denied their request for an injunction. The case got kicked up to the Ninth Circuit. Ninth Circuit said, we're going to send this back down to the trial judge with instructions to grant an injunction here, because this does violate the First Amendment rights of the plaintiffs. The judge reheard the case and then issued a partial injunction. And then this case was appealed back up to the Ninth Circuit. Back in July, the Ninth Circuit said, that's not what we said. You need to enjoin the entirety of this law. Again, that was back in July. It's now October. And the judge finally got around to filing that injunction against the entirety of the law. Now, again, this is just, and by the way, this case was filed back in 2022. We're just now getting to the point where the preliminary injunction has been reached. So this case is still moving forward. I did see a filing from late August where Anna Bevere, who is the attorney representing the plaintiffs in this case with Michelle and Associates, told the court that both sides anticipate filing motions for summary judgment. They anticipate that the case will be resolved in that filing. But if the case does go to trial, we're looking at maybe mid to late 2026 before this could be heard again on the merits at district court level. And of course, then if Attorney General Rob Bonta loses, as he should, or if the plaintiffs lose, as I think the judge would like, then the case gets appealed back up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I mean, this litigation has been dragging on for years, and it could be dragging on for years more. So my hope, I don't have a great deal of optimism and confidence about this hope, but my hope is that given what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has said about the merits of this law, that the judge will grant summary judgment to the plaintiffs in this case, that Attorney General Rob Bonta will not appeal that decision, because there is really, you know, again, the Ninth Circuit's already weighed in here. And this is the Ninth Circuit we're talking about. When the Ninth Circuit has a problem with the law dealing with our Second Amendment rights, you know that the law is pretty screwed up. Now, this isn't a Second Amendment challenge. This is a First Amendment case. But my hope, again, is that the Attorney General will drop this appeal, just let the matter rest. This is a law that, quite frankly, it really is indefensible. And again, it's not just an attack on the free speech of gun makers, gun sellers, distributors, some gun owners. As Chuck Michel talked about, this was an attempt to curtail the next generation from learning about and from exercising their Second Amendment rights. And that's exactly, you know, this is part of the gun control lobby's long game, right? To denormalize and to demonize gun ownership. It's too late for someone like me, right? I mean, I'm 51 years old. I'm set in my ways. But if they can get, you know, again, 12-year-olds up to, let's say, 22-year-olds, and convince them that gun ownership is a not just a bad thing, but it is a it is an evil thing to do. It is something that only twisted and evil individuals engage in. Then, you know, you've got a generation of Americans growing up with not just no respect for our right to keep and bear arms, no idea of its fundamental importance, but again, this skewed understanding of our right to keep and bear arms. And rather than support, you see animosity, right? And they've raised a generation of anti-gun activists. That's what they're aiming for with laws like this. And thankfully, the law has been enjoined in its entirety, at least for now. On the other side of the coast, down in Florida, we've got a new bill introduced, Fox News reporting this today, that would loosen the rules for armed volunteers at places of worship. Now, I confess, when I saw the headline, I was a little confused because I didn't realize that Florida actually had rules for armed volunteers at houses of worship. Senator Don Gates from Pensacola has introduced this bill that would waive some licensing and training requirements for armed volunteers that serve as security at churches, synagogues, and mosques. Fox News reports that the bill would allow armed volunteers to bypass some of Florida's existing licensing and training requirements if they're providing security at a place of worship. Gates said that pastors in his district asked for the measure, noting that smaller congregations often struggle to afford private security. Fox News reports that volunteers would still need to obtain a concealed carry permit, pass a level 2 background check, and secure approval from their local sheriff's office for any formal security plan. While the bill specifies that volunteers cannot be paid for their work, they could be reimbursed for training-related reasonable expenses. As Fox News says, it's not clear how much this legislation would alter existing law. The Florida Concealed Firearms Statute already permits licensed gun owners to carry concealed in houses of worship unless they are explicitly prohibited by that religious institution. So it sounds like, again, where this comes into play is whether or not those individuals are carrying simply because it's their right to do so, or if there is a formal security plan in place that, you know, would designate these individuals as members of the church security team. Now, again, I got to say, I don't think there should be any state intervention here. I think it should be entirely left up to the house of worship. I don't think that the local sheriff should have to sign off on any sort of security plan. If a church or a synagogue or a mosque wants to designate, you know, these five individual parishioners as their volunteer security forces, they should be allowed to do so. They shouldn't have to jump through any extra hurdles or hoops that are set up by the government. They shouldn't have to navigate a maze of red tape in order to comply with the law. I wish this bill went a little bit further and just got rid of those licensing and training requirements altogether for these houses of worship that have a formal security plan. Because I think one of maybe the unintended consequences of a law like that is that a lot of these smaller congregations are going to have informal security plans, right? They're going to say, well, we welcome armed parishioners. And hopefully, if a bad guy comes in, then we've got an armed parishioner who's going to, or more, who will be able to stand up and defend the flock, so to speak. And that's great. I mean, that's fine. But just because you want to have a formal plan in place. This is your responsibility. This is your responsibility. This is your responsibility. This is what we expect you to do if somebody comes in here with murder on their mind. Again, I don't think that should result in all of a sudden this layer of state oversight or oversight by the county sheriff. And frankly, again, I don't know why Senator Gates didn't introduce a bill to simply repeal that requirement altogether, but government gonna government, I guess. But this is at least a step in the right direction. I hope that it will receive passage in the legislature. Although, you know, again, with the Florida State Senate makeup, who knows? Because with the Senate President Ben Albritton around, you know, he has been very, very reluctant to move forward on a lot of pro-gun legislation, including the repeal of some of the post-Parkland gun control laws that were put in place, the ban on open carry, which essentially has been repealed through the courts now. Senator Albritton refused to let a bill be heard that would have resulted in the repeal of open carry's prohibition in Florida. So we'll see what happens with Senator Gates's bill. I hope that the Senate leadership is able to move this bill forward, but Florida gun owners should probably be talking to their senator and urging them to support this bill and other pro-Second Amendment measures when the legislature reconvenes here in just a couple months for the 2026 session. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivism report, I want to talk to you for a moment about something that I'm really excited about, and it's more important today than ever before. It's called Freedom Chat. It's a next-generation messaging app that's designed for people who still believe in privacy and who still believe that free speech matters. The team has launched their alpha version. It's available on both Android and iPhone, and I'd like you to download it now. Unlike the so-called free apps that spy on you and sell your data, when we talked with Tanner Haas from Freedom Chat, you know, he talked about how this was built with your privacy in mind. Your messages are end-to-end encrypted. They're not stored on servers. Screenshots are blocked. There's no tracking. There's no mining of your data. There's no listening in. It's just private communication the way it should be. And here's something that I really like about Freedom Chat. It has no ties to big tech. You know, even now we've seen like Google said, yeah, we were, you know, going after viewpoints that we didn't find acceptable. And they say they're not doing it, but I don't trust big tech companies. I certainly don't think they have our best interest in mind. Freedom Chat, on the other hand, built by people that I do trust, and you should too. I believe in it so much that I've created my own private channel inside Freedom Chat. It's at Barry and Arms Cam and Company. You can subscribe to it. I'll be posting exclusive content there. I confess, with everything that I've had going on in my personal life, I have not had time to do that, but I will be doing this in the very near future now that things seem to be, knock on wood, settling down a little bit to a new normal, at least for the time being. But no one can see what channels you follow or what posts that you react to. It's just your own secure, curated feed. So if you're ready for a messenger that actually reflects your values and keeps your conversations private, head over to freedomchat.com. Download it today. It's freedomchat.com, where freedom still means something. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. A story out of Dayton, Ohio. I swear we had another story out of Dayton earlier this week, but I think this is different. Springfield man sentenced to probation in Dayton shooting tied to a stolen vehicle tip. So, you know, we've covered some Armed Citizen stories in the past where somebody's car gets stolen. Maybe they've got, you know, a tracker on their car. Maybe just someone tells them, hey, man, I think I saw your car at the gas station down the street. Anyway, they show up. The person behind the wheel of that stolen car has a gun. Shots are fired. The armed citizen fires back in self-defense. We've covered this before. And I understand, you know, if somebody steals your car, A, that's not going to be a huge priority to, you know, for police to recover your vehicle. It's just not. I understand that. It's a much bigger deal to you, the victim, than it is to law enforcement. There are more serious crimes that law enforcement's investigating. And honestly, I mean, when you look at the arrest rate for stolen vehicles, it's abysmally low. So the idea that, you know, I'm going to go get my car back, again, I understand. But that doesn't give you the right to just start shooting at somebody who you think might have stolen your car. And it sounds like that was the case in Dayton, Ohio. Montgomery County Common Pleas Court Judge Mary Montgomery sentenced 36-year-old Mark Messer to up to 5 years of probation. Order to pay $800 to the victim, have no contact with the victim, after Messer pleaded guilty to one count of felonious assault back on August 22nd. So he pled guilty to a felony crime, a second felonious assault charge, one count of discharge of a firearm on or near prohibited premises were dismissed. This is an incident that started last December when Messer got a tip on social media that his car that had been stolen was at a home there in Dayton. Or I guess maybe Trotwood, Ohio. So Messer drove there, had two women with him, reportedly surveilled the home. And then when the 67-year-old man left the home, they started following him. Now, it sounds like the 67-year-old man was not in Messer's stolen vehicle because, according to police, the 67-year-old had nothing to do with the stolen vehicle. So why they followed this guy, I'm not sure. But at one point, police say a, quote, disturbance took place and Messer shot into the vehicle. Thankfully, the 67-year-old was not hit, but again, shouldn't have been shot at. It had nothing to do with that stolen vehicle. He apparently was not any aggressor in any kind of, you know, road rage incident. So, again, my question is, why does somebody get probation for something that's a pretty serious crime? I mean, he shot at somebody. Even adding in the extenuating circumstances here, I don't think that helps Mr. Messer's case. I assume that Mr. Messer had no previous criminal history. I assume that this was his first run-in with the law. And I'm not saying 5 years in prison would have been the proper result instead of 5 years probation, but probation only just seems like a bit of a slap on the wrist, considering what transpired there last December. On to today's armed citizen story. And this is, boy, I got to tell you, this is a painful one out of Florida. You know, a lot of times when we're talking about defensive gun uses, most of the time they involve strangers. Right? I didn't know this person breaking into my home. I don't know why they were attacking me. In this case, though, the individual who acted in self-defense knew their assailant very well because it was his stepfather. The headline, Lehigh Acres man released, charges dropped after he killed tyrant stepdad in self-defense. A cautionary note here, even if you act in self-defense, there's going to be a police investigation. You could very well get arrested. You could very well get charged. And that was the case. Back on August 31st, Lee County, Florida sheriff's deputies arrested a 19-year-old, Isaiah Barsalo, on his birthday, accused of one count of second-degree murder in the death of his stepfather, Damian Martin. That death occurred the day before on August 30th. On August 31st, Assistant State Attorney Michael Bazzani filed a motion for pretrial detention, hoping to hold Barsalo without bond until his trial. On September the 4th, the judge agreed and said Barsalo could remain in custody without bond. So, basically for the past month, Barsalo has been behind bars. Well, at least he was until September 25th. That day, his case was considered closed, according to the state attorney's office. In a letter dated September 24th, Assistant State Attorney Andreas Gardner wrote that there was insufficient evidence to prove that Barsalo had committed second-degree murder in the August 30th death of Martin. That document, according to the news press there in Florida, states that on August 30th, Barsalo, his mom, his girlfriend, and his little sister were leaving to go to Miami. His stepfather, Martin, was going to be at home. Everybody is in the car, ready to leave. Martin said all of a sudden, the little sister could not go to Miami. He took her out of the car, took her back into the home. Barsalo began to argue with his stepfather, who said Barsalo could not return home. Basically, I'm kicking you out. And then the stepdad went back inside the home. So Barzallo got out of the car in order to retrieve his belongings from the home, knocked on the door, which I guess was locked at the time. Stepfather came out and then went into the garage. According to prosecutors, the stepfather and stepson continue to argue. They're moving through the garage. They go to the garage door and then the area of the driveway. Authorities say that Martin repeatedly threatened Barzallo with violence. According to Barzallo, he told Martin, "Stop walking up on me." In response, Barzallo pulled his firearm, pointed it at Martin. Barzallo described Martin reaching towards his waistband for his firearm, and in response, Barzallo fired several shots. Martin shot several times, went to the side of the home before Barzallo fled, and then turned himself in hours later. Barzallo's statement was, quote, confirmed largely in part by Barzallo's mom, who is Martin's wife. Barzallo talked about how his stepfather had threatened shooting everybody before, had threatened to burn the house down, had accused of, said he was tired of his family, wanted to start a new life. Prosecutor said that an investigation of the family background, quote, unveiled a frequency of ongoing prior verbal altercations, anger management issues, prior threats of violence, and prior specific acts of violence by Martin towards Barzallo and his mom, as well as Barzallo towards Martin. Authorities say that both Martin and Barzallo were known to have tempers and possess firearms, adding that the chain of events, quote, appear to be the result of a tumultuous, dysfunctional family relationship and provides a disturbing backdrop to this case. They added that Barzallo would be justified in using deadly force if he reasonably believed that the use of such force was necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to himself or to prevent the imminent commission of a forcible felony. As such, Barzallo had the right to stand his ground in a place where he had a right to be in a manner in which he did. Therefore, Mr. Barzallo would be immune from criminal prosecution. According to the news press, Sergeant Sarah Rodriguez, who's a spokesperson for the Lee County Sheriff's Office, said that the death of Martin was the 12th homicide so far this year, the only one deemed self-defense. We know we talked about, I think it was Fort Myers, Florida, yesterday, that four out of the six homicides in that city have been deemed self-defense, a little bit different here in Lee County. And again, you know, this is a tragic situation, but it sounds like, again, because of the long history of the stepfather's actions, including, again, specific acts of violence, that may have led Barzallo to reasonably believe that his life was in danger. Again, I think it's a sad situation all around. Anytime a family member is forced to act in self-defense against another, I just think that's heartbreaking. But I'm glad that Mr. Barzallo is out of jail and will no longer be facing charges for protecting himself against his stepfather last August 30th. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I hope that you will check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, tomorrow, and over the weekend. We're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. I will be back on Monday. I will have a guest, I promise. Probably going to be Mark Walters. We talked about that earlier in the week, doing another Monday with Mark. So we'll be kicking around some of the big Second Amendment stories. Be sure to check out Mark on Armed American Radio on Sunday evening. And until we talk again, be well. Oh, actually, you know what? Before I let you go, I should mention there is a big sale going on right now. VIP, VIP Gold, VIP Platinum memberships, 74% off when you use the promo code POTUS47. You can find out more information at BearingArms.com, but that is a fantastic savings, and I hope you'll take advantage of it. We'll see you back here again on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.